You're listening to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Lexington podcast. Take a moment to center yourself in this space and enjoy this week's sermon.
Today's reading is a poem titled Colors Passing Through Us by American writer Marge Piercy, a progressive activist and feminist. Purple as tulips in May, mauve into lush velvet, purple as the stain blackberries leave on the lips, on the hands, the purple of ripe grapes, sunlit and warm as flesh. Every day, I will give you a color, like a new flower in a bud vase on your desk. Every day, I will paint you as women color each other with henna on hands and on feet. Red as henna, as cinnamon, as coals after the fire is banked, the cardinal in the feeder, the roses tumbling on the arbor, their weight bending the wood, the red of the syrup I make from petals. Orange as the perfumed fruit hanging their globes on the glossy tree, orange as pumpkins in the field, orange as butterfly weed, and the monarchs who come to eat it, orange as my cat running lithe through the high grass, yellow as a goat's wise and wicked eyes, yellow as a hill of daffodils, yellow as dandelions by the highway, yellow as butter and egg yolks, yellow as a school bus stopping you, yellow as a slicker in a downpour. Here is my bouquet. Here is a sing-song of all the things you make me think of. Here is oblique praise for the height and depth of you, and the width too. Here is my box of new crayons at your feet. Green as mint jelly, green as a frog on a lily pad twanging. The green of cause lettuce upright about to bolt into opulent towers. Green as grand chartreuse in a clear glass. Green as wine bottles. Blue as cornflowers, delphiniums, bachelor's buttons. Blue as Roquefort. Blue as saga. Blue as still water. Blue as the eyes of a Siamese cat. Blue as shadows on new snow. As a spring azure sipping from a puddle on the blacktop. Cobalt as the midnight sky, when day has gone without a trace, and we lie in each other's arms, eyes shut and fingers open, and all the colors of the world pass through our bodies like strings of fire. Again, that's Colors Passing Through Us by Marge Piercy.
Wow. How have you been changed in your life? How have you been changed by others or the world? Maybe more importantly, how have you changed yourself? These questions have been coming up a lot for me lately. I find myself having conversations with my peers, people around my age, late 30s, early 40s, the exennials. As we're entering middle age, and having these conversations about what we're noticing in life as it changes. And many of you are on different parts of your own journey with this. So I'd love to hear about that too. But for at least my cohort, my friends, and the people closest to me, starting to realize that we're starting to say no more often so that we can say yes to the things that we really care about. We find that we're facing mortality, especially as we work with our parents who are, as all people do, continue to age, or dear loved ones and friends and uncles and aunts and other people near and dear to us, or even ourselves going, why is that thing hurt? I didn't know that was a body part. Or little bits of gray coming in. And also asking, if we don't change now, when will we? When will we take this seriously in our life? Or when will we make that decision that we thought we would make during lockdown when we were made of time, or so we thought? Or that idealism we had when we were younger? Where has that gone, and how can we maybe harness some of that again? So I've been thinking about change a lot and talking about change a lot, and I've even talked with some of you about change throughout the lifespan. And even then, thinking about change, which often gets a somber tone to it, there's celebration, new chapters in life, new friendships, new discoveries, new ideas, new passions, and then even around us in the world, especially on a spring that is emerging in Kentucky, celebration and life and hope and emergence again and again and again. And so that's why I turn to these spring holidays, and beginning with Holi, a holiday that, honestly, before I became a Unitarian Universalist minister, I didn't really know a whole lot about. But it's a fascinating holiday that is celebrated by millions of people across the globe right now in this moment, both in Hinduism, but then there's even some legends of Muslims throughout time celebrating this as well that were, of course, in Hindu communities. But Holi, in this fascinating religion called Hinduism, which I always have to add the caveat, Hinduism is not a single thing. There is not a Hindu pope. Hinduism varies widely across the Indian subcontinent and throughout the world, depending on where you're from, which state, where your family traces their roots, a variety of gods and incarnations and practices and experiences. So even in this holiday of Holi, the traditions are vast and wide and fascinating and wonderful. And it's a celebration that goes back at least 300 years before the birth of Jesus of Nazareth. So this is an ancient holiday that has been celebrated in a variety of ways for centuries and centuries and centuries. And it boils down to the triumph of good over evil, life over death. And it happens roughly around the same time every year. But do those themes sound familiar? There might be something else happening in a week that has similar themes of good over evil, life over death. And even last week with the celebration of the equinox, good over evil, life over death, life over death. Every holiday around this time, life over death. So there's so many celebrations that accompany the various myths and gods and communities that come to Holi and celebrate Holi. But there's two really wonderful stories in addition to the one you heard earlier about the ogress eating children. And two wonderful stories that I would love to lift up here. And the first one is, how do you even call, why do we call this Holi? H-O-L-I. And it's the legend of Holika and Prahlad. And way back, time immemorial, you know, when you look at the scope of time in traditional Buddhist and Hindu cosmologies, it is eons and eons and eons and eons ago. But there was a demon king whose name was Hiranyakashyap, and I'll just call him the demon king. And this demon king was granted a wish. Sometimes the stories say he was granted 3 wishes or 5 wishes or 7 wishes or a variety of other wishes. The story I've seen a lot is that he was granted 1 wish by Brahma. And he chose, I want immortality. And so Brahma said, great, you are immortal. No one can kill you either in day or night. Which is interesting. Hold on to that for a second there. Cannot be killed in day or night. And this made the demon king go, aha, no one can confront me. I will be worshipped by everyone as a god. And many of the people in the kingdom followed suit, except for the demon king's son, Prahlad. Prahlad refused and continued to worship Vishnu, despite his father's objections. Now, the demon king went to someone named Holika. Holika was immune to fire. And the demon king knew this and said, Holika, I have a problem with my son Prahlad, and I want you to trick him into sitting on a massive fire with you so that he burns up and there are no longer any barriers to people worshiping me. This gets pretty intense, right? And so Hulika managed to do that and tricked Pallad into sitting on this funeral pyre, this massive bonfire, whatever it would be, just massive. And they lit the flames, but Pallad knew what was going to happen and had already prayed to Vishnu about this. And Vishnu intervened because Vishnu knew that Pallad was a devotee and I would not betray that devotion. And so as the fires are starting to consume the wood and make its way up, Hulika started to feel the heat. Pallad was spared from burning into ash, but not Hulika. Now, some legends say that before the end, Hulika said, "I swear I will make up for my past misdeeds," and that's why it's called holy. Others say that it's about burning up our negative energy in the fire, about getting rid of all of our evil thoughts and deeds in the fire, and that's why it's called holy. There's a lot of various different things here. But after she was burned up in this fire, Vishnu says, "All right, I need to go fix this." There's a lot more to it. I'm condensing the story significantly here. There's an incarnation of Vishnu who appears and goes to this demon king and slays him. And as the demon king is being slayed, he goes, "Wait a minute, I thought I was immune from being killed during the day or during the night." And Vishnu says, "It is dusk." And so this is where you get a lot of the traditions of bonfires, in addition to the story we heard earlier, and this idea that good will triumph over evil, even if evil feels like it's immortal in our lives, right? That there's always some way to vanquish evil in our world and in our lives. There's another great story, and this has to do with the images you see, and you'll probably see an image up here of throwing colored powder into faces. Maybe you'll see an image. There we go. Isn't that wonderful? Could you imagine we'd have a blue carpet after this? And this has to do with Krishna and Radha. And Krishna had deep blue skin. Sometimes say it was so blue that it almost looked like it was a midnight blue, almost a black in color. And Krishna was deeply in love with Radha. And yet, Radha was seen as someone who is fair and white and pure and out of reach, paler than me probably. And this is an interesting story because she kind of knew about her beauty and how no one could come near her, and Krishna was just so madly in love with her. And he went to his mother and said, "This is something that I need, like, I'm madly in love, I don't know what to do, she will reject me because my skin is a dark blue. What am I going to do?" Now, this is an interesting thing here in this conversation with his mother. Krishna was often seen as a trickster god in many ways. Trickster might not be the right word. There's a lot of little antics in the myths and the stories. And here's an example of this in his relationship with his mother. Once his mother confronted him for eating dirt as a little boy, and he lied, said, "I'm not eating dirt. You know, trying not to show I'm not eating dirt." And his mom said, "Open your mouth and let me see the dirt." And as Krishna opened his mouth, did she see dirt, do you think? I think a couple people know the story, but no. She did not see dirt, and here's what she saw. She then saw in his mouth the whole eternal universe and heaven and the regions of the sky and the orb of the earth with its mountains, islands, and oceans. She saw the wind and the lightning and the moon and the stars and the zodiac and water and fire and air and space itself. She saw the vacillating senses, the mind, the elements, and the three strands of matter. She saw within the body of her son, in his gaping mouth, the whole universe in all of its variety, with all of its forms of life and time and nature and action and hopes, and her own village and herself. So that was the relationship between mother and son there. So she knew this about her son and said, "How about this? How about you try to trick her into letting you paint her face blue and see what happens?" And so long story short, he manages to trick her and Arata into painting her face blue. And as he's doing this, as her skin becomes darker, she also falls in love with Krishna. As all good stories, they lived happily ever after for eons and eons afterwards. But this is really interesting because it often it flips it around. That thing you thought that people would reject you over is also what you can share with people and also make the world a more beautiful and wonderful and loving place. That's the heart of that story right there. And that's why you have this wonderful tradition of throwing colored powder, all different colors. It's great to see people afterwards. They're like, eyes are, it's wonderful. This tradition of throwing colored powder, symbolizing love, change, spring, letting go of how we look, all the things we think we're going to be rejected for, and embracing them and sharing them with others. That's a lot to unpack there, though. And Holi really gets this idea of joy and change and goodness and love and life. I mean, just look at that picture. Love and life abounds right there. Right there for us. These myths that come from Hinduism are not connected to many of our lives in this room, though we might have heard of them, and maybe even some of us celebrated and lived them. But the heart of these stories can be. Burn away jealousy and negativity. We can do that and learn that from this story. Let go of appearances and the things we worry about being rejected for if it means rejoicing in life, which we can do and we need to do when life is difficult. Now, it's really interesting to see all these holidays line up because turning our minds toward Purim in the Jewish tradition, it's a story of Queen Esther convincing her king husband, I'm going to mess up his name, Ahasuerus, there we go, Ahasuerus, it was right there, Ahasuerus, to kill the man Haman, the general Haman, who was plotting to eradicate the Jewish people in the kingdom, right? If you've never read the book of Esther, I can't guarantee it'll be a page-turner for you. Sometimes some people really love that stuff, but the book of Esther is a great story of a woman working within and through an oppressive patriarchal system to subvert it and rescue her people. And it's often a story that doesn't get lifted up. It's a fascinating story. So this general Haman plotted to eradicate the Jewish people, and there's so much more to this story, but the tides turn and the king listens to his wife. And Haman is ultimately killed and his followers. So what do people do? I think there's another image here. They celebrate. They celebrate life, something that could have been as massive tragedy, a story of oppression, of being isolated, of feeling hopeless, and seeing the tides turn good, triumphing over evil, and celebrate with a carnival. Clowns, balloons, food, hamantaschen, little pastries that are in the shape of Haman's ears. Colors come bursting forth and the celebration of life, celebrating resilience and the triumph of the good. There's one more holiday that's converging right now, Palm Sunday. I think we have an image for that one too. Palm Sunday, which in the Christian tradition is the triumphant entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. And so what is that holiday really all about, right? It's about expectations. The great expectations of a great teacher's return to the city. For me, I remember for the Catholics in my family, I remember the smell of the palms and the greenery and the freshness and how that said spring is here. But how quickly the tide turns in this story. In many traditions, you're given palms on Palm Sunday. In other traditions where palms don't grow, you're given what grows locally. Could maybe give you these black-eyed Susans instead of palms. Or pods from the Kentucky coffee tree in the parking lot. Or honeysuckle we're trying to get rid of. But it's about seeing these palms. It's not just this joyous celebration. Yay, there's a parade, because we know how the story ends, right? Palm Sunday is a beginning of Holy Week, and it culminates in death, but then resurrection. But in death on Good Friday. And when you have these palms at home, they turn brittle and yellow. And a year later on Ash Wednesday, you burn them to ash. All those hopes and celebrations and expectations burn to ash. And with the words, remember you are dust, and the dust you shall return. And still it is celebrated like this, knowing where the story leads. The expectations and life still abounds. What I love about this photo is I think it's the priest is just using a squeeze bottle to get the holy water out. I just like, oh, you're done. I love it so much. But it's still celebrated, knowing that there'll be the death, knowing that there'll be 3 days of grief and pain and suffering and wondering, and then out of the gloom and hopelessness, all of the joy and new life come emerging out of this story. So this is a fascinating series of holidays that we have before us. And we continue to ask ourselves, especially with spring coming, how have we been changed? How have we been transformed in our lives? How has the world changed us? How have we changed ourselves? And maybe even a deeper question, how have we let others change us? Sometimes willingly, sometimes against our will. I believe these three stories point the way for answering these questions in our lives. In Holy, we see a story of burning away our ill intentions, burning away the negativity, a story of deep love, loving yourself. And loving someone else or the other or whatever it might be. In Purim, we see that threats of great oppression and persecution remind us to rejoice. Rejoice where the good triumphs. Rejoice in life still being here. In Palm Sunday, we know that this journey, where this journey of life will lead, it's not just a story about one man, it's a story about every single person on this planet, where our lives will lead. And we know it can be tragic, we know it can be difficult, we know it can be shocking, but humanity, for all of its imperfections, has a way of finding new life again and again and again and again. The thing about these stories is that it's all about people meeting life as it is. Sure, it could be about gods and goddesses, it could be about people that are so far out of reach, people that may not have existed, people that did, but it's about people meeting life. And we, the lucky listeners, get to see what they did with that. It's whatever life brought their way. This is a way of saying, be mindful, be in the moment, right? And perhaps these stories can imbue us with the hopes and the dreams of spring, of new life, again and again. And maybe we'll paint ourselves blue, right? Or red, or yellow, or pink, or mauve. Periwinkle, I don't know. Maybe we just prefer a matte finish. The real change, the real transformation begins with meeting our lives right now in this moment. That's what these holidays are telling us about. The good, the bad, the ugly. Not in a way that diminishes what we are experiencing in life, maybe oppression or maybe we're difficulties, health issues, facing our mortality, whatever it is, even great celebrations, not in diminishing those things in life, but telling us to say, in this moment, what can I do for myself and then for the world? How will I change? In Unitarian Universalism, we talk a lot about our principles, our shared values together. And our shared values also offer us a way here. We talk about a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It's free, but it's also responsible. And that we encourage one another in that growth to find what is true and good and life-giving for ourselves and for our communities. And so with this convergence of holidays, Holi, Purim, Palm Sunday, I wish you, in this moment, to discover how you will change and grow and transform yourself and the world. Blessed be. Amen.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. If you would like to learn more about us, please visit our website at www.ucl.org, where you can find more information about our grounds, staff, and upcoming events. You can also subscribe to our e-news there and learn about our virtual service offerings. We'll see you next week.